Well, this is an amazing book, and we must not get tired. We must not get tired of, look, we're just here for a little while. You know, life is short. Everybody knows that. Some lives are shorter than others. Some go on and on. Seems like, I mean, look at Fidel Castro. He just keeps hanging in there no matter what. They say only the good die young. I think there must have been a very, very good reason for that little cliche having been created. You know, that's what a cliche is. It's something that's commonly used that at one time made a great deal of sense and still does. But in any case, this what happened on 9/11 was absolutely unbelievable, and it is undeniable that the world has changed, and not for the better since then. Privacy out the window. Now, you and I both know in our quiet moments that the security services have been listening to our telephone conversations for a long time. However, there are some people of integrity from back in the day when the surveillance apparatus was really capable of listening to a lot of people and doing it well. There was a responsibility that, that these men and women felt was incumbent upon them to protect the integrity of their operation by ensuring the privacy of the individual American citizen. And don't you find that over the succeeding decades, there has been a de-emphasizing of the right of the individual to be individual as number two praised. Number six, that would have been played by Patrick McGoohan in that fabulous series, The Prisoner from 68, I believe, yeah. Yeah, we want to become part of the collective. Lean on the government. The government will help you. We don't. I mean, when's the last time you saw a kid take a lawnmower engine apart or build an engine in a garage or learn how to fix something? Now just call somebody. You know, oh, yeah, we've all gone so green that we have disposable everything. We don't set the milk bottles out there to be picked up, washed, and then reused. We don't cash in our soda bottles anymore and get a little change for them and then have those washed and reused. No, we just throw more and more plastic into the landfill. And then when we feel like, well, we're running a little bit low on money, what can we do about that? I know, a carbon tax. Well, the global warming thing's gone right out the window, don't you think? Over 2,000 record low temperatures this year, only 600 record high temperatures this year. And Mr. Gore is much, much richer than he ever was before, and still somehow people think that he is an authority on global warming. And a lot of people are prepared to swallow that sort of junk science, and these are the same people who don't even know who their elected representatives are. So, back to 9-1-1 in this book, Another 19, Investigating Legitimate 9-11 Suspects by Kevin Robert Ryan. We cannot let this go. We cannot get tired. We cannot quit pushing back against government. We cannot quit pushing back against a dishonest mainstream media. We cannot get tired of pushing back against propaganda. And in just about 2 minutes, we're going to let Kevin Robert Ryan loose and tell us whatever it is he wants to tell a few million of his closest friends right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. All right, his book is Another 19. His website is another19.com. Use the numbers, ANOTHER19.com. Kevin Ryan, welcome to the program. First-time guest. Glad to have you.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be with you tonight.
This is a brand-new book. Copyright's 2013, so how long has it been out?
It's only been out about 2 months.
Love it. Well, I received your copy and just started reading it, and I just thought, oh, I mean, I had to stop every once in a while and just not put my face in both hands, but just put a palm against my forehead and just lean on that elbow for a minute and go, good grief, how deep does this really go? Tell us about you and your what led you to be with Underwriters Laboratories and what happened then, and just take it away.
Well, I'm a chemistry laboratory manager by trade, and that's how I ended up working for Underwriters Laboratories. And I led a division of UL for a number of years. And when I worked there, I was in communication with the chief executive officer and also other top managers at UL, and learned that the company had, back in the 1960s, had done the fire resistance testing for the steel components used in the World Trade Center towers. And that's basically the kind of work that UL does, including the division that I worked for. We did safety testing of all sorts of things.
And is that destructive testing in many cases?
That's right, it is. And in case of the steel components, the idea is to prepare them in exactly the form that they'd be used in a building, and to use a standard test to test the fire resistance, the ability to hold its load, and the transference of temperature. And this is all done in huge furnaces in various locations that UL owns. So what they did for the World Trade Center was they ensured that the steel columns and the floor assemblies used in the towers would be able to withstand very intense fires for hours. In fact, the steel used in the World Trade Center towers was certified to withstand 3 hours in terms of the floor assemblies and 4 hours of intense fire in terms of the columns. And one of the glaring problems with that is one of the World Trade Center towers was completely destroyed in only 56 minutes.
At what temperature, Kevin?
Well, the temperatures in a typical office fire are about 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. And in the furnaces, they're 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And as I said, they're exposed to these temperatures for hours and not just a few minutes.
Right.
So the World Trade Center was designed to withstand the impact of airliners. That was stated very clearly by the man who was the chief design engineer, John Skilling. And in addition, the steel components were certified to ensure that they would withstand hours of intense fire. That's not what happened on 9/11.
Nope.
No, and so in 2003, I began asking questions about this, primarily because, frankly, I was politically ignorant in many ways, looking back in hindsight now. But, you know, it occurred to me after it was clear to me that the lies that were used to start the Iraq War were told in a concerted effort. There was actually an organized effort, including people like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, to lie the American public into this enormous war. And that led me to ask when the lying might have begun. And it reminded me of these communications I'd had with UL executives. And so I started asking questions. And for about a year, I asked questions at UL about how this could have happened. And I found that no one at the company could explain how those buildings could have been destroyed in the way that the official reports said that they were. I was told to wait for this report from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, and I did that. And when I saw the report, I found that the report ignored the physical tests that were done as part of the investigation, which my company helped to perform. They built floor models of the World Trade Center floors, put them in the furnaces again, just to repeat the whole test over again, and found that the floors would not fail. And they did steel temperature tests and found that the steel temperatures that were seen at the World Trade Center were less than 500 degrees Fahrenheit. So this didn't add up, and I ended up writing to the government. And as a result of that, I was fired at UL. That was 9 years ago.
Did they consider this request whistleblowing?
Well, I'm not sure if they use that term, but technically that is one of the definitions of whistleblowing, in that you're exposing information that is otherwise not available to the public with regard to a company's activities or the government's activities. And so that's what I have been called over the years, and I'm open to that. I welcome that sort of thing, because I believe, you know, I'm an American citizen, and I believe that we as American citizens have an obligation to take control of our destiny, not allow these events of 9/11, which were the origin of the war on terror, to devastate our country financially, morally, in so many ways. I think that we really need to find out the truth about what happened, and not just an academic truth, but actual truth that leads to justice. And that's my mission, has been for 10 years now.
Kevin, you know, this is really quite a pregnant point that you have made, and that is that even asking an indiscreet question could constitute whistleblowing and the vilification that follows it.
Yeah, and, you know, so my questions were very pointed, very specific about the tests that were performed by NIST and UL and how the report conclusions ignored those tests. And as a laboratory manager doing similar types of testing, meaning testing to national standards, that would never have been even considered in the laboratories that I managed, where you would run a test and you would totally ignore the results in order to come up with what ultimately was a political conclusion supporting the preconceived notions of what happened on 9/11.
Now, the NIST is, as you pointed out, is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and it was formerly known as the National Bureau of Standards.
Yeah.
How can you get away with ignoring the testing of the structure, and it doesn't come into public awareness at all? They just go right on by it.
Well, over the years, we've found that people from NIST have expressed the fact that they were under a lot of pressure to essentially support the political story. And I believe that's common now that I've learned more in government scientist work. Basically, you know, they're paid to overlook things that don't support the political framework that they are paid by. And so it's not terribly surprising to me now, but at the time I was really just outraged. I couldn't believe that, especially given the import, the you know, what 9/11 really meant to all of us, I couldn't believe that scientists would just falsify their work. And now, to some extent, I have to say that I'm sure there are honest people at NIST, although perhaps not as not brave enough to speak out and lose their job. But the conclusions, I believe, were framed by different people than the people who did the actual testing. So it may be a complicated situation in that regard.
Well, you know, we have a couple hours and a half. We do have a number of commercials that we play, and we got about 40 minutes per hour for actual conversation. So if I seem to be pushing us along here, you just kind of control it from your end. We'll both fly this airplane tonight, okay?
Okay.
Some of the points that you make here, the many opportunities for U.S. intelligence agencies to track down and capture the alleged hijacker should have resulted in the attacks being stopped before they happened. Another point you make, four planes should not have been hijacked because the systems in place to prevent hijackings should have been effective. Then the U.S. chain of command should have responded to the attacks immediately, but it did not. And then the U.S. national air defenses should have responded effectively, and some, if not all, of the hijacked aircraft should have been intercepted by military jets, but were not. And the three WTC buildings should not have fallen through what should have been the path of most resistance. And then, of course, there's Building 7 and that famous BBC report where the correspondent is talking about the building having collapsed and it's standing in the background. Then they go off the air and then they come back. Oh, we've reconnected with our correspondent. Go ahead. And the building's down at that point. My problem with all of this, Kevin, is where is the outrage? I mean, you're talking about you're an American citizen. I'm an American citizen. I want the answers. You feel like we should have the answers so that we can, you know, forge our way through the future with you know, a foundation of truth and some integrity, and yet it's just not happening.
Yeah, well, there actually are millions of Americans who have been crying out for the truth about 9/11 and for many years. In 2006, there was a poll by Scripps Howard that showed that 36% of the American public believed that in some way the Bush administration must have been either involved or allowed the 9/11 attacks to occur so that, the country could go to war in the Middle East. And so there have definitely been many people calling for the truth about 9/11. There is, unfortunately, I found a need to improve on the media sources that we look to. For example, Coast to Coast provides information that you're not going to find on CNN and for others. And we need to support those kinds of media if we're ever really going to allow these kinds of questions to progress until we find truth and justice and hopefully ultimately some peace in our lives.
Well, all right then. But as we see, this is the, how long have we been in the Middle East now? This is the 10th year. We went in there in March of 03, right? Yeah.
Yeah, October 2001 actually is when we invaded Afghanistan, but you're right, March 2003 is when we invaded Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you're talking here about another 19. Now is that literally 19 other people, or is that title a metaphorical title?
Yeah, it's somewhat of a metaphorical title. The idea is to state, okay, the government has finally told us what they believe occurred, and they say that there were 19 young Arab Muslim men led by Osama bin Laden, and if you look closer, another fellow by the name of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So these 21 people really pulled off this completely unbelievable attack, overcoming the trillion-dollar defense system, intelligence system of the United States. The point of the book is to say, okay, we know what you said. Those of us who have read the 9/11 Commission report and the NIST report have found them very lacking in terms of providing the actual answers. So, you know, some of these things could really not have been accomplished by young Arab Muslim men. And we could talk for a long time about that. But we can, as independent citizens, suggest ways in which these questions that haven't been answered, which you nicely outlined, how did three tall buildings fall through what should have been the path of most resistance? How could the national air defenses have been disabled for 2 hours, and so forth and so on? We can propose 19 other people in this book, I do, who were actually in position to make those things happen exactly as they did. And, you know, for my part, I spent 6 years investigating the scientific side of this, the World Trade Center specifically. And in the last 4 years, I decided to say, I said to myself, well, we've been calling for a new investigation for so long. Why don't we start doing some of this investigation? And that was the point with another 19. Let's look at another 19 people, partly because people seem to believe that it's, you know, the official account is more believable because it's only 19 people. Well, here's only 19 people who actually had the power to do what was done and still not been explained.
Understood. All right, then. Yeah, this is a an interesting little quote right at the top of Chapter 2 of Kevin Ryan's book, Another 19. Quote, he's a ruthless little bastard. You can be sure of that. And that's former President Richard Nixon describing Donald Rumsfeld. What a perfect cover. We'll talk about that with Kevin Ryan when we come back. What a perfect cover. You're going to war for the oil, but we didn't take the oil. Well, you're going to war so Halliburton can rebuild the whole country. That didn't happen either. So if that didn't happen, doesn't that lend some credibility to the so-called official story that this really was a fight against terror? We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Yes, indeed. Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. You know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again to make sure that everybody who may possibly tune in to the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM or any other broadcast where your humble narrator and talk show guy, John B. Wells, that's me, might be presiding over. I liked George Bush in the beginning. I thought he was okay guy. On that first blush, when these attacks on the World Trade Center occurred, I thought, yeah, it's kind of good to have a Wyatt Earp character in there going, yeah, we're going to go kick some rump over this. And it started looking worse and worse and worse. So, as much as I may have liked you at one time, Mr. Bush, I got to tell you, we're going to continue to entertain these what might be called outrageous conspiracy theories until somebody comes up with an answer that doesn't make Mickey Mouse look like a genius. Okay? Are we clear? Okay, good. Another 19, that's the book. Another 19, that's the website. Use the number 19, another19.com. The work by Kevin Robert Ryan. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Kevin Ryan, tell me, if you will, and a few million of our closest friends, just a couple of guys talking here in the big room. What was the stated reason for Underwriters Laboratories to cut you loose?
Well, they said that I had harmed their relationship with the client, NIST. So NIST was a client of UL. And in my termination letter, which I still have, of course, is just the statement that that I had harmed the company's relationship with its client, NIST.
Yeah. I'm curious about something. Sometimes I'll ask a question, and if you don't want to go into it, just say, no, I don't want to go there, and I'll let it go, seriously. But what sort of a reception did you get when you because a couple of these radio outlets were certainly left-leaning, and they're not going to support the Republican president no matter what. They'll take a shot at him. That's just how it is. You know, we get that. Right does it to the left does it to the right. And like I say, one prostitute works one side of the street, one works the other side of the street, and the street goes that way, and we're all going that way. Yeah. What sort of response did you get when you went on NPR and Air America and, you know, outlets like that?
Well, different responses. So on NPR, I was brought into a show called On Point, and they brought in a substitute host. And they also brought in two people who are known in the subject as debunkers. So they brought in James Miggs of Popular Mechanics, a Hearst publication. They brought in a Canadian man named Jonathan Kay, and the subject was about 9/11 skepticism. So they invited me as the sole 9/11 skeptic, and basically every 30 seconds, they use some form of the term conspiracy theorist. They gave me about 5 minutes to respond to that in the hour-long show. So that wasn't very good. But on Air America, I debated a man named Michael Shermer, who is the editor of a magazine called Skeptic. And it turns out Shermer is not very skeptical about most things that are risk to authoritarian power. But that went fairly well, and we were both given fair and equal amounts of time, and so that went pretty well. I've also been on Pacifica Radio, where generally it's the same sort of thing, a debate format. They try to let everybody have their say.
Okay. I was just curious. I wondered if because of the political orientation, it might have gone more pro-conspiracy theory than against it.
Well, I tend to agree with you now that I've learned more about the history of things like false flag terrorism and the kind of relationship between media and government that I've seen over the last 10 years. I agree that the two-party system is something of a mirage, that there really, as Gore Vidal once said, there's really only one party in the United States. It's the property party, and it has two right wings. And Now, I'm not sure exactly what he meant by right, but there does appear to be just one party in the United States.
The rentier class, they're pretty much useless other than taking money from other people for something that's a tangible asset, whether it's rent or whether it's your job. Rumsfeld, Donald Rumsfeld's name just keeps coming up and coming up. A lot of people didn't like him. They thought he was a harsh man. And then I couldn't resist reading that quote from the beginning of chapter two. He's a ruthless little bastard, that one, says Richard Nixon. So how can you put Rumsfeld's position into perspective for us? Did he have a little bit, I sense that he had much more influence than even we thought, and he appeared to have quite a bit.
Right. Yes, he did. And his colleague, Dick Cheney, also did. And the two of them represent an alternative Osama bin Laden and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed for this book. So they aren't among the 19. They're the two people who were in perfect position to coordinate the attacks of 9/11. And Donald Rumsfeld has a very interesting history going back to the 60s when he worked for a private intelligence firm, and that launched him into a career in politics. He was a congressman for a number of years and became close with Gerald Ford, who ultimately helped him further along in his career. But Rumsfeld, for whatever reason, as a very young man in his early 30s, was given promotions into the Nixon administration and then the Ford administration that were really unprecedented in terms of the power that he held. He was a special assistant to Nixon. Then he became the White House chief of staff for Ford and the Secretary of Defense, the youngest Secretary of Defense, and then many years later, the oldest Secretary of Defense. But during the 90s, he really started showing that his approach seemed to be very hawkish. He was founder of the Project for a New American Century, PNAC. People may have heard of that, a neoconservative group that published really extremist sort of interventionist policy recommendations.
Yep.
And he, believe it or not, early in 2001, he made several comments stating essentially that nothing would change that needed to change until there was another Pearl Harbor. And that's the name of another book on 9/11 that just began going into the questions that haven't been answered. But Rumsfeld on 9/11 was missing during the height of the attacks, and he was actually the second most powerful person. It was President Bush and the Secretary of Defense were the what's called the National Command Authority. And one of the reasons that it appears that the 9/11 attacks were accomplished is that neither President Bush was available. He was pretty much taken out of the picture. And also Secretary Rumsfeld took himself out of the picture and just went missing at the height of the attacks for more than 30 minutes. So Rumsfeld and his partner Dick Cheney should be focused on, and I go into that in the book to some extent, and also how all of these other 19 suspects connect with these two men over the years, and how they had the same sort of motivations.
You know, here in your book, I just wanted to back up from the actual text, what you just said. It's like by the time the second plane hit the WTC, Rumsfeld had moved on to a meeting with a CIA briefer. Reports vary on where he was after that, but National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice claimed she could not reach him. Some said that Rumsfeld continued with regularly scheduled meetings after the second strike, and he was on a roll with his predictions that morning. Apparently, he told Congressman Christopher Cox, "Believe me, this isn't over yet. There's going to be another attack, and it could be us." Minutes later, the Pentagon was hit. I mean, that's almost a, I don't know, a case could be made for it being, just can't resist letting a little bit of I know something slip out. Maybe it's hubris or...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Love of power seems to be a characteristic of Rumsfeld and Cheney over the years. And so that seems to be reflected in those statements as well.
Give us a little profile on Dick Cheney.
Well, Dick Cheney was behind the lies that started the 1990 Gulf War, the first Gulf War. People may not know that there were two major lies that started that first Gulf War, and Dick Cheney was behind both of them. One of them being that there was a buildup of Iraqi troops on the Saudi border. That's how he convinced the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to allow American troops on Saudi Arabian soil and help them, therefore, invade Kuwait after Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait. We went in there with our troops and drove them out. But the other lie was told by a young Kuwaiti girl. She was coached by a company called Hill & Knowlton to tell lies about Iraqi soldiers taking babies out of incubators and leaving on the cold floor to die. Well, Cheney was behind that as well with Hill & Knowlton. And another suspect was actually in this book was closely related to Naira, is her name, as well, as I get into later into the book. But Dick Cheney, you know, he's behind these Gulf War lies. He and Don were behind the 2003 lies to start the Iraq War. And in between there, we're essentially being told by the 9/11 Commission and others that we're to trust these people about their activities and what they say about 9/11. President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney both actively sought to prevent any investigation into 9/11. You know, they called Tom Daschle, the Senate leader, and they actively sought to defund it. It was only funded at one-tenth of the amount that was allotted to investigate President Clinton's sexual exploits. So it was clear that that these men did not want an investigation into 9/11. And on 9/11, Dick Cheney was definitely in a position of power, the most important person at the White House. He was in control in the bunker of the White House, the office called the Presidential Emergency Operations Center. And as well as that, there's been testimony from Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta that Dick Cheney was tracking one of the planes as it came into Washington. This is a somewhat famous testimony. Mineta said that a young man would come into the PEOC and tell Vice President Cheney that the plane was 50 miles out, and then he'd come back in and say the plane is 30 miles out. And when it came down to 10 miles out, he asked the Vice President, "Do the orders still stand?" And the Vice President whipped his neck around and said, "Of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?"
Yeah, I've heard that one.
These are the exact words of the testimony to the 9/11 Commission of Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta, who, by the way, has stood by that testimony for years and still does, that Dick Cheney was aware of one of the planes coming in, although the official account said nobody knew anything about it. And there's some sort of orders that were given. So Cheney is very suspicious with regard to 9/11, and he's the one most suspected of having been involved.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of, you know, Kevin, as we go through this thing, our interview is just like I say, just a couple of guys talking here. So I'm almost like, wow, a new friend. I want to ask him all kinds of stuff. Before we leave the destructive testing, what do you happen to know what temperature Jet A burns at?
Well, jet fuel burns at actually a lower temperature than office furnishings.
It's like 900 to 1100 degrees, isn't it?
That's right. And what's more important with jet fuel is that everyone, including NIST, all of the government investigators, agree that the jet fuel burned off in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. So as far as the failure of the steel allegedly, or the destruction of the buildings, all the jet fuel did was make a big explosion and kind of theatrically, you know, give us this notion that there was something terrible happening. Of course, there was. There were many poor people dying in the buildings. But the jet fuel burned off in only about 5 minutes, according to NIST. So it was the fires that were fed by office furnishings that, according to NIST, caused this vast amount of steel in the building to originally to melt, and then they changed that to soften. And then finally, after I spoke out, they took all the softened wording out, And 7 months later came up with another report that said the steel had simply weakened. And, this is unbelievable. I mean, it's like being given many different stories and having the media ask us to believe each one as they come through.
I thought that was just, I talked to a friend of mine some years ago that probably within 18 months after the event, I said, no, I've been on the internet. And I said, that sure looks like controlled demolition to me. I'm sorry, but, wouldn't you think if something crashed in on one side, something would tip over or something? But instead, just goes straight down. Both of them just go straight down like that. So I'm going down the clothesline. I say it was controlled demolition. A lot of people think so. What do you think?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the premises of the latter half of the book, is that explosives were used at the World Trade Center. And, there's not just the false official accounts to support that, which people should see the struggle that NIST went through of many different accounts, from pancake theory to columns-only theory, to other theories, and finally this kind of vague pile-driver theory that they have now. These were all failed attempts to explain how the buildings were destroyed through non-explosive means. But they never looked at the explosive demolition theory, and there's a great deal of support for that from near free-fall acceleration of the buildings, for one thing. We're talking about removing hundreds of connections, bolts and welds per second, hundreds per second would have to be uniformly, simultaneously removed in order for the buildings to do what they did. And, we also see in the photographs these things that are called squibs. There are these high-velocity bursts of material shooting out like a cannon from the side of the building, not just from the collapse zone, but up to 30 floors below the collapse zone, these cannon shots. So those cannot be explained through a fire-based explanation. And not only that, but there were many witnesses to explosions and flashes of light and so on and so on. All of the evidence really points to the buildings having been destroyed through the use of explosives. Now, that in itself doesn't necessarily discount the 19 original suspects, except that I have done a great deal of investigation into who might have had access to those buildings in order to place explosives in them, and I don't see any evidence for these young, the average age of the people who were accused was only about 20 years old, and they're from foreign countries, mostly Saudi Arabia. And they just didn't have access to these buildings to plant explosives.
That doesn't sound good. Well, I'll tell you what, I can't believe the first hour is over already, but we have two more to go. So when we come back, let's go back to the personnel who were in charge of various agencies at the time this travesty was perpetrated. And that would be FBI Director Louis Free, who, if my memory serves me, he didn't really stick around very long after that event. Our guest tonight is a first-time guest. I love first-time guests. They're few and far between. When they come on, they're pretty strong, and this is one of the strongest. His book is Another 19. That's the website, too. Another, and then use 19. And somebody just said his website's crashed. Sometimes that happens, Kevin. We crash sites. Get it? Investigating legitimate 9/11 suspects, Kevin Robert Ryan. We'll be back with him after a few messages and little news. This is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM.